Golf Smarter number 82 for July 10, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Fine-tune your game from 100 yards and in with Mike Wilkerson.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thank you for being a member of the Golf Smarter team. Whether you're a rookie or a veteran, we appreciate the time that you spend with us. Let me remind you that in our 81 previous programs, we've covered a lot of information that can really help your game strategically, mentally, and physically. So take advantage of the best part of podcasting and review our catalog of programs and listen to as many as you'd like. But whatever, listen to the Golf Smarter podcast. And of course, if you enjoy the program, I invite you to write reviews on iTunes and tell your friends. On today's show, Mike Wilkerson, a former player on the Australian Tour and currently teaching at Tri-Mountain Golf Club in Ridgefield, Washington, teaches us how to improve our game from 100 yards and in. That's where the scoring is done. And Kenny Nicholson introduces us to an intriguing new club by Prince Golf. Welcome, Mike.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Before we get started, I want you to know that we had a request from a listener who's one of your students who wanted you to be on the Golf Smarter podcast, and this is what he had to say.
Hi, I'm Randy Shields from Castle Rock, Washington. My wife and I are taking lessons from Mike Wilkerson, Director of Instruction at Tri-Mountain Golf Course in Ridgefield, and he's a very exuberant teacher, very into it. If Mike thinks you're not doing it quite right, he will reach over and readjust your hands, your butt, your back, whatever, and it's man, woman, whatever. He's very enthusiastic about what he does.
And
it makes you feel comfortable.
How long have you been taking lessons with him?
About 3 weeks.
Okay. And have you been seeing some improvement already?
You bet. And my wife is definitely seeing the improvement.
Well, thank you.
You know Randy and his wife, right?
Yes.
How are they doing?
They're doing fine.
Now, Mike, you teach both at Tri-Mountain Golf Club in Ridgefield, Washington, but you also teach on a simulator at a retail location, right? What's the difference of teaching between teaching out on the green grass and teaching with a simulator for you?
Well, I think the simulator is really good for full swing, whereas I haven't done a lot of short game stuff on the simulator because I do all that up at Tri-Mountain. But I think there's advantages to both.
And what would that be?
Well, the simulator gives us a lot of the stats and the spin rate, launch angle we're looking for nowadays when we fit drivers. Also, it keeps stats of previous shots, and they're over in the corner of the screen. So I can let the student hit balls, and they can see their pattern before the lesson, and then once we fix something, it shows up there.
Is that data valuable in teaching as well as in learning? Does that really change the way teaching is done?
I think it's more just the info. Some people they need to see numbers and stuff more than just seeing the ball fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each student's different. Some are more into numbers. Some are more in the feel. So I think that's good for some people, and I think it's really good as far as fitting drivers nowadays.
Is that the numbers? Uh-huh. And getting fitted for a driver, you think you shouldn't just go in and pull a driver off the shelf saying, I like the look of this, I'm going to buy it. You think getting fitted is valuable?
Oh, nowadays, yes, because they can fit a driver to your swing. Whereas in the old days, it was you'd just keep trying them and trying them until you found the one that fit your swing. Because, yeah, it's all based on launch and spin rate now. So I've really taken a couple of my students in there and gained them 20 to 40 yards just because they had the wrong driver.
Wow.
Without changing their swing or anything.
Because I know one of the local retail stores by me, they'll give you the 90 days to go out and play with it, and they'll give you an in-store trade. You know, you go out and play, you see how it feels and what kind of ball flight. But you're saying you're going to get more information if you can be on a launch monitor and get fitted in the store and learn more about each driver than taking it out on the course for a while.
Well, I would, get fit on the monitor and then take it to the course.
Sure.
I think that's the ultimate.
Sure.
You know, because my swing is never the same in a simulator as it is on a golf course.
Why is that?
Oh, just tempo, timing, you know. I think we speed up a little on the golf course. I think everybody does.
Oh.
And then I think at the range or in a simulator, you could start swinging too hard because you're looking at the numbers and, you know, swinging several drivers in a row.
Well, that's really a valuable point and valid, too, that you probably are comparing your own competitive nature. You're going to try to beat yourself with each time, each one.
Especially if you're seeing it right there.
Yeah, exactly.
On a golf course, unless you're pacing it off and minus and trying to figure out how far each guy went, you really wouldn't know that.
Yeah. Well, the thing I wanted to concentrate on our discussion today is playing at 100 yards and in.
Yes.
And how we can improve our game and lower our score, because I would really think, you know, we're talking about drivers and trying to get as much distance as possible, but that's not where the scoring is done.
Right. A good drive does not make you a par.
That's correct. Even a bad drive doesn't make you a par, but you can get one.
But if you make a good putt, you can make a par. A good chip, you can make a par.
Good chip
or good iron.
A good chip can get you a birdie, too. Right?
Yeah.
So let's focus on that a bit. In your instruction, where do you begin on how to improve your game at 100 yards in? And let me ask you this. Is it 100 yards in or 150 yards and in?
Well, I go 100 and in.
Okay.
Because some of those, 75, 60, those aren't even full swing.
Right.
So most under 100-yard shots are not even full swings, especially for men.
Right.
And then I've been keeping stats here on my own, probably for 5 or 6 years, just on my own scores. And it's amazing that tee to green or to that 100 yards, that works out, especially over several rounds. I average the same number of fairways, same number of green. Sure, some days it's better, some days it's worse, but on an average, that doesn't change. And my score is based on what I do inside 100 yards.
Let's talk about the statistics that you keep.
Well, I keep, every time I play, I keep my score.
Mm-hmm, of course.
That, and then I keep my number of putts per hole, and the only time we count those is on the green. Once you're on the green.
So on the fringe is not a putt?
No, that's where we count. The only other stat I keep is that 100 yards and in.
On the fringe, it counts as your 100 yards and in. Okay, good.
Yeah. So that 100 yards and in counts every stroke inside 100 yards, including putt. And I just have that as another separate score.
And tell me what you're learning from it, how you're learning, and how much detail you keep with each statistic that you have. Are you talking about which club you're using and the distance? Or just, okay, so from 100 yards in, I took 2 strokes.
Just a total, yeah. And every time I make a 2 inside 100 yards, that usually relates to a par. And every time I make a 3 inside 100 yards, you just make a bogey. And every time I make 4, I look down my score and it's a double bogey. Same with students.
But now I'm lost. So your 100 yards and in does not count your putts?
No, it does.
Oh, it does count your putts. Okay.
Every stroke you're taking.
Every stroke you're taking. I got it now. Oh, okay. So, you're hoping to be on in regulation, so.
Well, not even if you're not on in regulation. Say you're just off the green. You chip it on one putt, that's a 2 inside 100 yards.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about some drills. Let's talk about some ways to increase your consistency from 100 yards and in?
Okay, well, the first thing, I believe, is adding it up and seeing what percent of your score is spent there so that you know how much time of your practice needs to be spent there. For me, 56% of my shots when I play are under 100 yards. So 56% of my practice time should be spent on that. Whereas most people are going to be a lot higher. I'm really good inside 100 yards, but most people, that's going to be 60 to 70% of their score.
How does that translate to what they do on the tour?
I'm real close. Tour guys, where's my stats? They're not as good as people think. Like, I only average 8.4 fairways around out of 14. I think the tour's right at 9. I only average 11.3 greens per round. The tour's right at 11 or 12. And I average right around 29 putts around, which is 29 is what the average on the tour is also.
Okay.
And I also keep up and down with, if I miss a green in regulation, you know, if I hit 10 greens that day, I go back on the 8 I missed, and I want to know how many of those I got up and down for par. That's another stat I keep. And I'm right around 64% getting up and down on the green I miss. Which, when I first started keeping that stat, was like 40%. And then once I started keeping track of that, I try a little harder when I have to look at those stats and the numbers at the end of the round. So, and then inside 100 yards, I averaged 40.6. So about 2.25 a hole, which most people are probably 3.5 and up per hole inside 100. Tour guys, they don't hit as many greens as people think and as many fairways. It's just they always have low putts and they get the ball up and down, which is where I think you have fun in golf.
Is the up and down.
Just being able to save yourself after hitting a bad shot.
Right.
Not paying for it.
Yeah. What motivated you to start keeping those statistics?
Well, when I taught at a range, I usually get people hitting the ball good enough to break 90 within a lesson or two. And then they keep coming back to me telling me these scores they were shooting. And it just didn't make sense to me. So finally I decided to start playing with my students. And once I got out there on the golf course with them, I found out it was this 100 yards and ins where, even though I got them hitting it well, that doesn't put a good score on the board for you.
Mike, I gotta stop you there. You're saying that within a lesson or two, most of your students are breaking 90?
No, they're hitting it well enough to break 90.
I was thinking you should be making as much money as Tiger with that kind of statistic.
If they could putt and chip.
I see.
But that's what takes time. You need to spend time putting and chipping to build an imagination around the green, which is how high the ball has to go and where it has to land to roll down the hole. And, I mean, really, the only way to gain that is to go out and hit chips and hit putts and get a feel for that. Whereas a lot of people, they spend their time hitting bull shots. You know, they go to the range and spend 90% of those balls over 100 yards.
I find it very difficult to take half shots or three-quarter shots. My tempo changes dramatically, and my body movement seems to change radically when I don't get a full shot in. How can I correct that?
What I do for the non-full shots is limit the length of my backswing, but keep my full finish, full follow-through. Whereas most people are taking the club too far back and then not following through.
They're decelerating?
They're decelling, yeah. Mm-hmm. Where if you swing to your full finish, I don't see how you can decelerate. Through the hitting zone.
How do I keep from speeding up, though? My tempo seems to change when I'm trying to do that.
Practice. I mean, a majority of my, if I ever hit balls, which I don't hit a lot of golf balls, but if I ever do, it's the 50, 75-yard shot, you know, where I'm taking it like halfway back and then full finish.
Mm-hmm.
And just working on tightening up my backswing. That's where I seem to get in trouble. It was getting too long in my backswing. And so hit shots really, really helps me. Plus, those are your scoring shots. You know, I think you learn a lot about your full swing hitting those little shots. Because you still have to square up the club face and do everything. It's just your going a little slower and not going to get as tired. And hopefully you get good feedback on those shorter shots.
Should I try to slow down my swing, or is it much more deliberate swing when I'm going half or three-quarter?
Well, I've had I like taking a little half backswing, but I do have some people that sounds like you that have a little trouble with the timing when they shorten it up.
Mm-hmm.
So those people, I just have you take a full swing, but just no power. Just kind of a long, lazy swing to throw a 50-yard shot up in the air. So I try to work with people. You know, I don't have a set swing, or because I know not everything's going to work for the same person, for each person. So I've had a few students that we had to do the long, lazy swing for some of those.
And explain that. I think that's intriguing.
Just full swing, but no power. You know, you're just kind of full swinging it smooth.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That way you're not having to, because a lot of guys, yeah, you start taking that halfway back and your timing, unless you practice that, it gets messed up.
Yeah.
Plus, I've got to take it back real slow. If I get quick with that half backswing, then I get out of whack. But if I go real slow on that backswing and kind of gather myself, then I can really feel myself accelerate through on those.
Mm-hmm.
And with that full finish, you should be able to throw a high shot in there, high finish, high shot.
I also have noticed that when I try to take a half swing, that I put more of my knees and my body and sway into it. I'm just not as consistent with my full, you know, with the half swing as I will be with my full swing. How can I prevent all that extra body movement practice? But what would you recommend?
Well, you might do a drill where you put your feet together and just kind of, where your knees are almost touching, to where if you sway, you're going to fall right over.
Good.
Otherwise, I would try for you, I would try to keep, you know, I try to keep those 50, 75-yard shots as close to my full swing. Same ball position, same width. The only thing I'm changing is the length of my backswing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some people are going to change ball position, you know, maybe change swing. I think that's, we need to keep it as simple as we can to your, as close to your full swing. So we're just learning one setup and keeping that consistent.
Do you find that it's more advantageous to carry a multitude of wedges in your bag versus a bunch of fairway woods? Do you, or do you think that you can make those adjustments on your distance instead of with a bunch of wedges, but with your swing?
Nowadays I think you need to put more wedges in your bag just because of the ball going farther. I think we have more of those shots nowadays.
Ball going farther on your drive.
Yes, yes. Whereas I don't think we need as many long irons. I'd rather have somebody have that ability to have those extra shots around the green.
And with the high MOI drivers, you're getting, you know, more opportunities to either be in the fairway or near the fairway that you can. It seems like you're making shorter, more shots at 150 in than ever before, huh?
Right, or even 100 yards in that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of these kids, that's all they got left after they smash it down there.
Yeah.
They got under 100 yards. They need four wedges.
Wow.
Especially with the companies, you know, a pitching wedge nowadays is basically a 9-iron in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
They've really tweaked the wedges to where you go from pitching wedge to the sand wedge nowadays, you could have a 12-degree gap in there. You could go from 46 to 56, or some of them are even down to 44 degrees.
On the pitching wedge?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're jumping, that's too big of a gap for a shot you're almost going to have on every hole. You know, 80 to 110 yards. So I think those are really important nowadays, getting. And plus some of, like, sand shots. When I teach sand shots, I teach one technique, and we use different clubs, depending on how much roll you want on it.
Let's talk about that drill. Actually, that was my next question, is let's talk about getting out of the sand.
Okay. We learned one technique. Do the same as a lob shot. So I killed two birds with one stone there. And there was same as a lob shot, so open club face, open stance. And we want to hit behind the ball on purpose in the sand. So there's two things I do to make sure that I hit behind the ball on purpose. One is I play the ball forward in my stance. And the other is I will dig my feet into the sand, shift them back and forth to build a good stance and base. Which, while I'm doing that, I'm actually lowering myself an inch or two into the sand. So that alone, those two things are going to, hopefully my mistake will be fast. Not thin.
Right.
Because I can show people, and I show them in lessons, if you have an open club face to start with, where the bounce is hitting, you can hit 8 inches behind the golf ball and it still comes out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now you're digging yourself in. You've got an open stance, an open club face, balls up in the front of your stance. Where's your weight shift at address and then your weight shift on your swing?
I just use a normal full swing.
Really?
Yep. Transfer weight, swing through, throw the sand onto the greens. The last thing I'm thinking is throwing sand out, because that's what's pushing the ball out. There are some people, I don't think about it, but some people need to actually favor a little more weight on their left foot, just to keep them still in there, not them moving too much, and to give them a little better angle of attack. Some people have to think about that for chipping and sand. Not something I think about, but some people to get that little better shaft angle and get them where the club is actually getting down on it, need to lean into it. But that each person's separate, and it's different there. So,
And that's why when you work with somebody, you can see what their tendencies are, and then you can adjust that way?
Yeah. Women, especially in the sand, we have to try, you know, different laying open of the faces. The women just have a tough time generating a lot of club head speed in there, which you need for sand, to splash that, you know, the nice chunk of sand out. So sometimes I have to square up the face a little on the ladies. But I just don't see as much consistency there. The men pretty much, you know, have strong enough swings. I can just teach one technique there. But that's, again, that's something, you know, you need to spend time.
What do you see as the most consistent mistake of people make coming out of the sand?
Most common I see is they don't have the face laid open to where the bounce is working for them. They have the face square to where the leading edge actually hits, and then the club is digging. Whereas, rather than sliding through the sand when the bounce works.
Oh. So you need the bounce to be what's cutting through the sand, not the leading edge.
Right, right. The only time you'd want that face square to shut and digging would be when you had a buried ball.
Right.
Because then you need the club to get down under it.
Right.
But most people, yeah, they have that digging, and then the club just stops there, so they can't generate any acceleration through there to even throw the sand out. And that's usually the first thing I do with my students is I have them just get in and hit sand. They got to be throwing that sand out over the lip before they're ever going to be able to push a ball.
Right.
With that sand over the lip. And then, like I think, that's the last thing I think is just throw the sand out. Don't think about the ball. You can think about that, you probably hit it.
Yeah, someone once said to me that you want to get half the sand halfway to the cup.
Right, or flying over the lips, what I wanted, or getting onto the green. Yeah, because wherever that sand goes is exactly where your ball goes.
So you want to get a lot of sand out of there?
I want to hit fat, yeah, on purpose. And, you know, if you want a short shot out of the sand, you take more sand.
Oh, not less swing, more sand?
Right. Or just a steeper, angle, or change club. You know, if you want to go shorter, I use my 60.
Hmm.
If I want to roll a long
but you
way,
don't have, but you don't have the bounce with the 60.
I have less bounce on my 60. I have good bounce on my sand wedge.
Right.
I think you need both. I think you need one without bounce, which I would want it on my 60, because that would be the one you'd probably be laying open if you had to.
Right.
And then I want a good bounce on my sand wedge in case I get in fluffy sand. But I'll go all the way down to my 7-iron out of the sand. Laying it open, chunking it out, it shoots out low and they'll run 30 yards where if I have a long bunker shot. Rather than trying to hit closer to the ball, which is why the 50-yard bunker shot's the hardest in the game. Because you got to almost skull it. But so some guys, you know, try to take less sand when they want the ball to go farther.
It seems to me like watching the U.S. Open and tournament rounds that the pros will try to get to the sand as opposed to getting into the rough. I mean, if they're going to miss, they'd rather miss in the sand than in tall grass. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Nowadays, those guys are spoiled. Bunkers are always raked. Their sand is very consistent from one week to another. You know, whereas like you and I, we got wet sand one time, gray sand the next. Those guys are spoiled. Whereas in the rough, they can't put the spin on it. They don't have control over it.
Do you think that a big problem with amateurs coming out of the sand is just fear?
Oh, yeah. That's where you need to spend some time to where you get over, you know, the fear. You're thinking more about the technique and where you want where you want the ball to land than, oh boy, don't do this, don't do that. Because, yeah, you just need to. I was actually, at one point in my career, I was a horrible bunker player. And I must have spent 200 or 300 hours in the sand when I played down in Australia. And actually, I'm pretty good out of the sand now.
Mm.
But that came with work.
My son said to me the other day, we were playing, and he goes, you like playing out. You like that when you hit in the sand. It's not so much that I like it, but I'm not. I find it a challenge. It's an entertaining challenge to me. I don't go, oh, no, I'm going to, you know, it's like the only reason I'm upset is I missed the green and I'm in the sand. But it's not something I try to approach it where I'm not terrified. I'm not freaked out about it. I see it as an entertaining challenge that I want to attack. And I have fairly decent success with it, I think, because
of your attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking, you know, whereas most people are walking in there thinking, oh, don't, you sculled the last one, don't leave it in, you know, thinking wrong. But you say you're thinking positive before you even get in there.
Except, of course, when I try to get out and I'm still in. Then all of a sudden everything speeds up, the attitude drops, and the score goes up.
Well, that's why we need to... When you get in trouble, we need to get out of trouble right away. Otherwise, yeah, you start speeding up so fast out there, you make bad decisions.
Right.
Where if you have a good 100 yards and in, you can take your medicine ball. You can punch it out to 80, to 75, and have confidence that, hey, if I don't get this up and down, the worst I'm going to make is a bogey. Because we can make up a bogey with one good shot. Whereas if you make a double or a triple, that's going to take four or five good holes in a row to make up for that one hole. Well, you make two doubles or double and a triple, you're running out of holes in 18 holes to make up for that. With bogeys, you can make that up in one hole. So when we're in trouble, you know, if you have a good short game, you can take your medicine and play safe and know that the worst you're going to make is a bogey, but you can make up for that somewhere in the round. And one thing I wanted to say, first part of this 100 yards and in that you have to get is putting. We, you know, that consumes 40 to 45% of your score, and that's for a better player. It's probably even higher for the higher a handicap. And the secret to good putting is an abundance of practice. But each person has to develop a putting style and a technique capable of converting putts 10 feet and in. You don't need to make 20-footers and 30-footers, but we need to make those putts 10 feet and in.
It always amazes me to go out to the practice putting green and see people just hitting 30 and 40 foot putts and not putting it 3 feet, just getting their stroke and getting comfortable with that.
Well, that's all I do when I get to a course is hit the 30, 40 footers, trying to get a feel for the speed of those greens that day.
Okay.
Most people will go out and do the opposite, throw them right down by the hole and hit 4 or 5 footers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not helping them with speed. Plus, I don't want to miss some of those before I even get out there. Instead of hitting balls and going to the range, I go and hit 30, 40-foot putts. And if you can hit a few chip shots just to see how hard the greens are and how much roll you're getting, I think that's more important than warming up, because most guys will warm up, hit the first green and two in regulation, and then 3 putts.
Mm-hmm.
And you're done the rest of the day. You're going to be doubting the speed. Plus, speed is going to determine the break. If you don't have good speed, even if you're reading the green's perfect, they're not going to go in. So speed is really the first thing you need to develop is good speed, so that your line you're reading makes sense. And you shouldn't be three putting if you have good speed.
This is all great advice, Mike. I really appreciate this time that you've spent with us. I've learned a ton, and I am ready to go back out and see if I can make it work for myself. It's great talking to you.
Thank you.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
And our most trusted advisor, Kenny Nicholson. Good day. How are you?
Good day, Fred. I'm doing great. How are you doing out there?
I'm doing really well. Weather beautiful there or hot, humid, and disgusting?
Hot, humid, and disgusting. Forecast for rain the next couple of days.
Oh, man. You got to come to the West Coast and play some golf with me.
Oh, I should. Yeah. Maybe I can get that out for a business meeting or something.
Ah, that's the excuse we like to hear. Hey, what's going on? We haven't reviewed anything in a while. Is there something new and exciting out in the marketplace that we can talk about?
There is, actually. It's not a high-dollar item, but it's a very usable item. I'll put it that way. We are selling them like hotcakes.
Really? It's
the Prince Golf Hybrid Chipper, and that's right. It's the first hybrid chipper that they've made. A lot of people watch PGA Tour or other LPGA or Nationwide Tour, whatever you watch, and you see guys using three woods around the greens for putting just off the green. And it's like, let's translate that philosophy into a club that's more usable. Prince has developed a 37-degree hybrid chipper that you can use from about 120 yards all the way into the green. It has a real high moment of inertia, so there's a lot less twisting at impact. It's a very versatile golf club, I'll put it that way. It's a little bit heavier than a normal hybrid, and it has a shorter shaft, so you're not going to hit it as far as a standard hybrid with the same loft. But the guys here have been using it and playing with it and tooling around with it, and it's absolutely phenomenal.
Really? And is it more like a putting stroke with that?
When you're around the greens, you definitely want to use it more like a putting stroke, because what that does is it obviously gets the ball moving in a forward motion. When you try to hit down on it and use a lot of wrist, obviously you're going to create a little bit of backspin and it's not going to get a true roll. But when you're around the greens, what you find is you want to take a normal putting stroke with it. Don't break your wrist and you get a good forward roll and you get the ball on the ground a lot quicker. And that's the philosophy, I think, whenever you're around the greens, is you want to get it on the ground as quick as you possibly can. And with this club, you're able to do that and get it rolling forward and true.
Is this a legal club?
It is, absolutely.
Really? Because I've seen chippers before. I've seen people talk about chippers. And you know, when I went to the golf school and they were telling me, you want to hit down on the ball, around the green like that and hit behind it and, get into the ground. But this is more of a putting, sweeping motion just to give it a little bit of loft to get over the tall grass and then onto the green, right?
That's exactly correct. There's a lot of different methods used in chipping, obviously, and we've talked before in past shows about the majority of your middle to high handicap players lose a lot of their shots around the green. So what you want to try to do is eliminate some of those shots, and if you can use a club that's going to help you, decrease your shots, obviously it's your score is going to go down. So what we found with this is some people have a problem shanking a wedge or hitting chili dipping a wedge, hitting it fat. With this club, it has a large sole, looks just like a hybrid. It's very, very user friendly. It's very hard to miss hit the golf club. I mean, we were literally trying to and couldn't do it. So
wow.
It's real fun. It's a versatile club. If you count clubs in your bags, obviously it's going to take if you use 14, it's going to take the place of one of your golf clubs. But the way I look at it is you're getting two for one. You're getting a chipper, and you're also getting a club that you can use from 120 yards in.
So you can take a full swing with this?
Absolutely, you can.
Oh, okay. And you're going to get a lot of loft if you hit it with a full swing.
You will hit the ball high, but it's going to land soft and roll more true is what they're saying. And that's what we found. I didn't test it on the golf course. I did test it on the range.
Uh-huh.
So I wasn't able to see it land on the green and roll. But what they're saying is you're going to get, whenever it lands, you're going to get a real forward true roll with it.
Well, I think it's interesting because of the conversation that you still haven't heard, but that we ran in today's program with Mike Wilkerson talking about 100 yards and in. And so ever since I recorded that conversation, I've been keeping track of my shots from 100 yards and in. And what I found is because I'm hitting the driver so much longer, I'm having more shots from 100 yards and in. You don't really need your 3-wood and the 5-wood, because if you have a hybrid in your bag, that the shorter shots, more wedges is what you should be carrying, I guess.
Well, typically, I mean, I carry 4.
Yeah.
And a lot of people tend to carry 4. I mean, you need a pitch and wedge, gap wedge, sand wedge, and lob wedge, because
right.
there's a multitude of ranges that you're in on the golf course that are from those distances. I mean, think about it. How many times have you been beside the green on a par 5 or a par 4, mm-hmm. and you walk out of there with, I mean, you're laying on a par 5 and 2 just beside the green, and you walk out of there with bogey, and you're like, my gosh, what happened?
Know it well.
Yeah, it really comes down to short game.
Yeah.
And this club is definitely an asset.
Now, is Prince Golf noted for innovation like this? Because
they are. Prince has been around for a long time.
Yeah, but I see them at Costco.
Obviously, you know, they're involved in other sports as well. But, you know, they make a very affordable, very high-end golf club.
And so how much does this club cost?
We sell it for $60.
So it's a very affordable, very usable club. It's a great deal.
It's absolutely.
All right. Well, people should give you a call and pick one up, or maybe we should just give one away.
I think us giving one away is the best way to start it out.
I think that's a great idea, and we should go ahead and let people know that that will be our next giveaway, although we haven't announced it yet, but now I just did. That's going to be our next giveaway. We'll give away a Prince Golf hybrid chipper, and if you don't win that, that's okay. You can always go buy one. They're not that expensive, and go to Edwin Watts Golf and purchase one. Call Kenny directly if you'd like, or just go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on the Edwin Watts banner, and it'll tell you how you can receive 10% off, free shipping. It's a great deal. What was the email that we received the other day from somebody? He said, if I get 10% off, free shipping, no sales tax, why would I shop anywhere but Edwin Watts Golf? Can I have a hat?
Exactly. I like the email.
Yeah, it was a great one. Well, great. All right. Now let's. Now that we've announced our next giveaway and that we've talked about a great new product, I think we should give away our last item that we've been talking about, the Sonartech Wedge, T35 Wedge. That's available right or left-handed, 52, 54, 56, 58, or 60 degree. We've received 160 entries over the last 2 weeks. Actually, we received a lot more, but people have been sending their name multiple times. And you know what? You don't have to do that. I eliminate it anyway. I try to make it fair. But the clever people are sending in, you know, we can't really email addresses. So if you different bodies in your house and you all have your own email addresses, hey! Please enter those people.
No, you're letting the cat out of the bag there.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I'm too honest sometimes. That's why I'm lousy at business. So 160 entries, and I've sorted them alphabetically by first name. And you, my friend, are the lucky person who gets to pick which number we're choosing today.
I'm the lucky one every week.
Yes, you are.
Or every time we do a giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to go with number 97.
Number 97 comes from Ipswich, Suffolk, England. And the winner is Mark Baxter. Mark?
Congratulations, Mark.
There you go. Kenny, you got to send it all the way to England this time. I love when we have to do that.
We've had to do that a lot.
Yeah. Well, recently we have. And we, you know what else? We've been getting a lot of entries from overseas. We got one from Austria the other day. I thought that was really cool. We haven't had Austria yet. But anyway, Mark Baxter, congratulations. You are going to have an email exchange with Kenny so we can figure out if you are right or left-handed and which degree loft you'd like on your Sonartech wedge. And, oh, Kenny, you know what? If anybody really cares, I doubt they do, but there's a podcast out there called Profitable Podcasting by a guy named Paul Culligan, and he interviewed me recently, and they just published the show. And I talk about you and Edwin Watts Golf a lot, so if anybody really cares, which...
Okay, since you plugged that one, go ahead and plug golf better at Edwin Watts Golf.
You can still, if you have not heard part two of our conversation with Scotty Cameron and Frank Thomas, please check it out, golfbetterpodcast.com, and now available on iTunes, way on top of the list in amateur sports. And we appreciate your feedback. We love the reviews on iTunes because it helps other listeners who are looking at shows if they think it's worthwhile. And with the feedback that you give, really helps everyone. So please check that out. Kenny, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Fred.
Take care, Kenny. By the way, now that Kenny's gone, let me tell you how to enter the contest. Forgot about that. Please go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest. All you have to do is fill out the form, enter the verification code, click submit, and you're there. That's all it is. I want to tell you about a new podcast that we have at smarterpodcasts.com. It's a NASCAR podcast. It's not NASCAR news like every NASCAR podcast is. This is a conversation with one of the drivers. David Reagan is a 21-year-old driver, and we get to sit down and have conversations with him and get to know what he's like. And it's a very different way of doing a NASCAR podcast, and it's the first one out there. So check out the number 6 AAA podcast. It's 6AAA podcast, or number 6 AAA podcast at smarterpodcasts.com. And it will be on iTunes any minute. So you can go in there and look for David Reagan. And we'll play a little promo for it at the end of today's show. Today's quote comes from Juan Gutierrez of Tampa, Florida. And Juan will receive golf's newest product, Windage, branded with the Golf Smarter logo. Windage will quickly and easily reveal wind patterns. And I guess in Tampa, they can be extreme at some points. Check them out at playthewind.com. Juan's quote is this: the best wood in most amateurs' bags is a pencil. If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
Hi, this is David Reagan, driver of your number 6 AAA Ford Fusion. Please join me for the number 6 AAA podcast. I'll do my best to give you an inside look at the life of a professional stock car driver and my thoughts and feelings about what it's like to be on the NASCAR circuit. Number 6 AAA podcast can be found at iTunes or smarterpodcasts.com.